Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, sorry for the delay in getting started here. I was hoping to run this clicker software, but it's rather annoying that it seems to overwrite the top part of the slide. Does that happen when other people use clickers? Oh, you can shunt it off to the side of the screen. So. So today the topic is going to be pipelining. So last two lectures we've been talking about CPU architecture and looking at firstly this very simplistic single cycle architecture, and then last time we looked at this notion of a multi-cycle design where we're making more effective use of resources in that each cycle, instead of having one fat clock cycle where we're trying to fit all activities, we've got smaller clock cycles which are just kind of tuned to each doing one single activity, and we discussed how in some cases this can be quite efficient because sometimes you don't use up all your clock cycles, you only use up two or three clock cycles rather than say a maximum of five. In this lecture we're going to be looking at how you really exploit concurrency in hardware. So the beauty of hardware is they can do many things at once. And these days, your budget in terms of gates, in terms of logic units, is just kind of growing astronomically. We always want to be thinking about trying to do more in every cycle and do things in parallel whenever possible. So we'll be looking at how you do that in the design of a CPU. The basic idea is that we're going to have this idea of each instruction executing in multiple cycles as last time. But now what we're going to do is, instead of waiting for one instruction to finish before the next one starts, we're actually going to try starting the second one, or subsequent instructions, while earlier instructions are still executing. So this might sound like magic, and it doesn't always work. And so we've been discussing this topic of what are called pipeline hazards. So this is when it doesn't quite work, and we're talking about why it doesn't work, and then what you can do to try and improve the situation. All right, so in a kind of classic story of pipelining, we have a pipeline with five stages, and we've been looking at that through the course of this lecture. In natural architectures, you might have deeper pipelines with more stages, or sometimes maybe with fewer, but five is a kind of good number for this lecture, and we'll use that for this example. So the first idea is that because we're overlapping the execution of different instructions, we're going to try to make the execution of any individual instruction as regular as possible. So we're going to make each instruction take the same number of cycles, in this case five, and we're going to try to have each instruction have the same pattern of resource usage. And in that way, it'll be the case on every clock cycle, we might have three, four, even five instructions executing at once, but each of them will be at a different phase of execution and using some different resource, so they won't be conflicting with each other. So that's what we're aiming for. Here's an example of taking the load word instruction and spreading it over five cycles. Now this instruction normally takes five cycles, so this isn't too difficult to do, but here what we're showing as well are some names of different stages of execution, and we'll use these names for all our instructions, not just this particular instruction. So let me walk through what's happening here. So we're looking at a load word instruction. If you remember, it's loading data into R1 from address contents of R2 plus N. That's what that's saying there. So first step, step zero, is instruction fetch stage. And we'll also do the program counter increment phase, assuming that this is kind of the default assumption that we're going to go on to just fetch the next instruction afterwards. So step zero, IF, instruction fetch. Step one will be the step in which we fetch register values out of the registers. So we call this phase reg. And here, we're actually fetching just the value of R2. Step two is a phrase where we get to use the ALU. In this case, it's for an address computation, adding the constant n onto the value contained in R2. In step three, the fourth step, we're now doing the memory access. We're doing a load access in this case, so we're reading data from memory into some internal register in the CPU. And then step four, we do a write back. We write the data into one of the registers. In this case, we'll write the data into register R1, this data that we've just fetched from memory. So, as I said, we'll be looking at other instructions very shortly and seeing how they too can be fitted into the same pattern. In this next slide, what I've done is to show you a picture of what pipelining is all about. So pipelining is all about concurrency, about doing many things at once. So we need a kind of visual way of helping us to understand many things happening at once. So when we're talking about pipelining, we typically draw pictures like the following. So how do we understand this picture? Well, what we've got is we've got time marching to the right. So this is our clock cycles, and each cycle, time's going incrementing by one step of the clock. Then what we're showing, we draw a box with a word in it, one of these, a mnemonic for one of these stages, when we want to show that a particular resource in the CPU is being used on a particular cycle. So when we draw this IF box up here for cycle one, we're saying that the IF resource is being used on, the instruction fetch resource is being used on cycle one. What we're kind of showing here is the an ideal picture of resource usage. So what we imagine is at each cycle, all five of these stages are in use. So this picture, you should imagine, is somehow continued off the top of the board and off the bottom of the slide down here. So every cycle, there are actually five resources listed in this order, actually, even though we can't actually see them. So here, you have to imagine there's a mem here, and there's a write back. Hello. There's a write back up here somewhere. I think my battery's just going. Great. So, what else to say about this? Right. So what we're doing also is then we're showing for each of the lines in this picture is really showing the execution of one particular instruction. Later on, we'll actually put names of instructions on each of the lines here to the left. So what we're showing, say, for instruction here on this... I'll use the mouse. On the second line, what we're showing is how, say, a second instruction executes in different cycles. So in cycle two, this instruction is fetched. Cycle three, it goes through the register fetch stage. Cycle four, it goes into the ALU phase. Cycle five, the mem phase. Cycle six, the write back phase. And then, so that's how instruction two will execute. Instruction three will execute like this. Instruction four will execute like this, and so on. So we've got this picture is showing the overlapping execution of instructions.
When this pipeline is stalled, if we needed the data from the registers that's written back on the previous instruction right on the next one.
We'll be talking about this concept of stalling, yes, shortly. For now, what this picture here is the ideal picture of everything working perfectly smoothly with the pipeline concept. So, as it says in the bullet here, this is kind of showing the ideal of at any one time, if we look at a snapshot, there can be actually five different instructions in flight at different stages. And as I was saying, even though it's not, you don't see it, you have to imagine this zone in the middle extending down to the right and extending up to the left to kind of show so that actually at every clock cycle, all five of those units are in use. And so with this kind of approach, each instruction is still taking five cycles to execute, but we're completing one instruction per cycle. So the CPIs, the cycles per instruction, the average number of cycles per instruction is, in the ideal case, equal to one, rather than the average cycle being 3, 4, or 5, as it was for the multi-cycle architecture. Let's look at how a couple of other instructions would fit into this five-cycle regimen that we've got. So here's a store word instruction at the top. We have, so remember, it takes the value in R1 and stores it at the address n plus R2. So again, we fetch the instruction. We get both values out of the register file. We do the address calculation in the ALU phase. Here, we now write the data from R1 to the address in memory, this address N plus A2. And then we're stretching execution out over 5 cycles, but actually in this case, not doing anything in that final cycle, but we still kind of record it there. We just kind of throw in a, just say, yep, we're doing nothing then. At the bottom, we see how we might do an add instruction. So again, fetch instruction to fetch the register values, do the operation. Here, we do nothing in the memory phase. And we wait until the write back to register phase to write the result to R1. So from the point of view of an individual instruction, what we're doing is not the most efficient thing. That here, with the add instruction, we could complete the add instruction in 4 cycles, not 5. But remember, what we're after is uniformity with all the these instructions. Pipelining will work when execution of instructions is as uniform as possible. This, incidentally, is another reason why RISC architecture is very appealing, because with a RISC architecture, RISC architectures are designed to be pipelined. They're designed to have a high degree of regularity between the different instructions and how they need to be executed. This cycle tries to show pictorially that this concept of speed up over the a kind of worst case non-overlapping execution situation. So this is showing here's what's happening with a pipelined architecture. We're starting a new instruction each cycle, finishing a new instruction each cycle. If we've got non-overlapping instructions, we have to wait until one instruction finishes executing in its final stage before the next one starts. And so this is kind of trying to show that, roughly speaking, the kind of we can expect a speed up that's roughly equal to the number of stages that we have in our pipeline. This is a lot of hand waving going on here, but this is kind of the very first rough approximation of the story. So pipeline sounds great. And most CPUs these days, except for the very simplest ones, use pipelining. But in practice, there are problems with this execution, this non-overlapping execution, this overlapping of execution of instructions. And these problems go by the name of hazards. And we'll be looking at 3 kinds of hazards in the rest of this lecture: structural hazards, data hazards, and control hazards. And because of these, we won't quite get this, say, a 5 times speed up. We won't get the CPI down to 1. But we'll get it down, maybe down to 1.3, 1.5, something like that maybe, which still is a great improvement. All right, the first kind of hazard, what we call a structural hazard. So by structural hazard, what we mean is a competition for resources, that while we try to make sure that each instruction was using different resources on each cycle so that they all could overlap their execution very nicely, sometimes they will be competing for the same resource on a given cycle. And here's one example. What we have, so down the left now, what we see are names of instructions. We're explicitly saying, well, we're doing a load word instruction here. So this load word, so again, remember, time is advancing to the right. And here are our instructions. And a load word instruction is doing an instruction fetch on this cycle, next cycle is going to this second phase, next cycle is third phase, next cycle is fourth phase, and this cycle is the fifth phase of the load word instruction. The conflict here is an access to memory. Now, what we're assuming, for the sake of argument for this slide, is that we have a single memory which is being used both for instructions and for data. And further, what we're assuming is that you can't access both an instruction and data in the same cycle from that memory. You can do one, or you can do the other. You can't do both. What happens then, so of course with something like a load word instruction, at some point we want to read data from memory. And when we do that, we're going to prevent a subsequent instruction from being fetched. And that's what this picture is showing. So the way we read it is like this. So here's this critical memory fetch. This is this fetch of data from memory by the load word instruction. Now, there's no conflict with the two subsequent instructions. These churn along as usual because they're doing their instruction fetches in this cycle and this cycle here before this memory access is happening. But now, instruction would want to execute here and start executing on this cycle here. But to do that, it wants to do an instruction fetch here. But it can't do an instruction fetch because somebody else is accessing data from memory. In particular, this load word instruction is accessing data from memory at that cycle. The way in which we indicate that then is we draw what's called in literature a bubble in our picture. What a bubble represents is a resource that could be used, but isn't being used. And if we were to draw our diagram slightly differently, we would actually explicitly indicate the name of the resource that wasn't being used. In this case, it's just a shorthand just to draw a bubble without something in it, because we can guess from the shape of the diagram what that resource is. So because all these IFs line up like this, we can immediately see that this bubble represents the instruction fetch unit being idle for one cycle, whereas this bubble here represents the fetch data from the registers resource not being used. Does that make sense? So these bubbles all look the same, but they actually represent a different resource just being idle for a cycle. So would we need two more lines where?
Of both, like before being
commanded. Well, we've got five bubbles here.
Yeah.
But you're saying, should this...
From I1, we have memory and the instruction fetch in the same cycle, yeah.
Right. So it depends what I1 is. It's a good question. Potentially, there could be a bubble there, too. Let's assume, for the sake of the argument, that I1 and I2... are not doing instructions relating to memory. They're doing things like an add instruction. Let's just assume, for sake of arguments, they're just doing some operation, which is, say, fetching data from two registers, doing something to that data, and putting it back in some register. So something like this, this add instruction that we saw here. So if that's the case, then these two instructions execute as normal, but you're completely right. For example, I1 was also a load word instruction, we wouldn't be able to fetch I3 here. We would also have another bubble here, and actually this whole line would be a line of bubbles. Anybody got any other questions on this? All right, let's go on. So, here we've got a conflict for memory. As I say, it's a conflict because we've got one resource, which is two instructions trying to use at the same time. In this particular case, there's a fairly straightforward solution. Even though, say, we'll use a von Neumann architecture where we'll have a single main memory which is storing both data and instructions, what we can do is have two local instruction caches. I haven't talked about caches yet. These are caches are kind of local fast memories often inside the CPU itself. And what we can arrange is that our CPU architecture is such that it's got separate caches for instructions and for data. So effectively, inside the CPU, there are two memories, even though the programming model and the way main memory is working is just to have one uniform memory that can accommodate both instructions and data. So if we do use a separate memory for instructions, separate cache for instructions, and for data, then the particular structural hazard that I showed you on the previous slide will not occur. You'll always be able to fetch an instruction every cycle and do a data operation every cycle. And the kind of general principle here is that when you are looking at your design of your hardware, when you identify things like structural hazards, you'll do a kind of cost-benefit analysis. You'll say, well, how often will this hazard occur? And what will be the penalty when it occurs? And what's the cost of me adding extra hardware to somehow work around that hazard? And in this particular case, having separate caches is a fairly straightforward thing to do and has other benefits as well. So it's something that's very frequently done in current architectures. Let's go on, look at a different kind of hazard. In this case, a data hazard. Now, a data hazard is due to dependencies between data. Basically, we have one instruction wanting to read data, say, from a register, which has just been written by the previous instruction. And in this case, we've got a slight issue, and this picture is a kind of bubble pipeline diagram that shows what's going on. What do we have? So here we have a sequence of three instructions. So the add is adding R1 and R5, putting the result into R2. Load word is loading data into register R3 from 4 plus R1, from this address. And now we've got an add immediate instruction, which is adding some value n to the value in register R3. So the dependency that we've got here is the third instruction can't read the data out of R3, of course, until the load word has put that data in there. We don't want to do the access of this R3 data too quickly, or else we'll get some previous value of R3. We won't get this new value of R3 that's just been written here. How does this look in the diagram? Let's see. So here's the different phases that the add instruction goes through on different cycles. And normally, that's the add instruction. So the add instruction writes to R2 here. The load word instruction executes along. And at this stage, it's writing the value 2R3 that's just been loaded from memory. And if we want to, so here we've got the add immediate instruction. It starts executing here, but then what we've got to do is have special hardware that is looking at the previous register accesses and is realizing that, aha, this add instruction is trying to access data that isn't quite ready yet. So what I've got to do is wait. So the add instruction does, the fetch is done at the add instruction, and then there's a wait. And we come down to here. It's not until we're in a cycle after this write back that the add instruction can continue here. So this is the tail four stages of execution of the add instruction. This is where it starts, and this is where it continues. And so we've got this dependency. And then this is where we can start fetching the instruction after the add immediate instruction. Now, let's start looking at this bubble space here. So remember, with these pictures, we've got this idea of being diagonals showing each resource being used. So there's the diagonal line kind of coming down here, for example, showing when the write-back resource is used on different cycles. So what we see is, we see here, here, and here, three times that the write-back hardware resource is just sitting idle, is not being used. And likewise, other kind of blanks within these bubbles all correspond to resources being idle, resources not being used. So we've got something like, we've got kind of four resources not being used here, five here, and one here. So it's kind of 10 cycles of, the 10 cycles overall in which kind of some resource is not being used. We're losing 10 units of processing work we could be doing with the hardware, but aren't doing. Is everybody with me? Any questions on what I've got to so far? Is this making sense?
What happens if you already have some deep in R3? Try to rebuild wrong data.
What happens if we've got data ready in R3 and we try to read the wrong data? We have to, when we design a pipeline CPU, we design it with extra special hardware that is detecting these data hazard situations and is going to avoid reading the wrong data. Now, it may be that in a highly optimized CPU, sometimes the recognition of these dependencies isn't left completely up to the hardware. Sometimes the obligation can also fall to the software. So actually, the hardware designer will say, look, I'm not going to give you any promises about what happens if you have a very tight data dependency, that you're accessing some data from a register where the data is only generated on the previous instruction. Maybe the hardware designer is going to say, look, you've got to provide me at least with one extra cycle of instructions. Maybe even just throw in a no operation instruction to provide that space for me to have the pipeline progress along further. Does that answer your question?
What if the next instruction is defined by if a branch is true or not?
We're going to talk about branches shortly. So if I don't answer your question then, come back to me. All right. Somebody mentioned this word stall. But when we have these bubbles in a pipeline, we talk about the pipeline being stalled, the pipeline being held up. It's not able to kind of progress, to go on and do what it wants to do. And in this particular cycle, this particular example, we say that we have a two-cycle stall in the pipeline because we're waiting. The delay from this register access phase of the add immediate instruction is delayed two cycles from where it should be. And what we're assuming too is that we're assuming otherwise execution of instructions is always kept in order. So if the add immediate instruction here is delayed, then by two cycles, then so also are all the instructions afterwards. One thing we can do in this particular case to reduce the size of this bubble and the size of the stall is do a reordering of instructions. That's what's suggested at the top here by these arrows. That if they, if at compile time, the compiler were to actually, what's just happened? That's what's happened. Okay, so yes, we were there. So this was the original situation, and we've got a add immediate following immediately afterwards. Actually, sorry. Now here we've got a three-cycle stall. Here, with this slide, our stall's gone down to two cycles because we've moved the load word up here. And now we still have this dependency, but we're losing kind of less computational resources. Sorry about that. I didn't realize the slide had got on one. So without the reordering, we have a three-cycle stall. With the reordering, which a compiler could do, we have a two-cycle stall. Sometimes with clever hardware, you can imagine that even the hardware can detect when instructions can be reordered, and it will do the reordering on the fly as instructions are being fetched. One other solution that we can adopt is called data forwarding. The idea here is that we actually have the, if we're looking at this result of this add instruction, we actually have the result of that add instruction one cycle before we've written it to the register file. So maybe we could design special hardware that would recognize this situation and kind of not only write that data to the register file, but pass it on immediately to the next instruction that's wanting that data. So with a bit of extra hardware, we can do this. And we can also, by doing this, we can reduce our the size of our store. So here again, we are, here actually, we're assuming that we're in a situation where normally there'd be a three-cycle store. We've got the load word here, and we've got the add immediate instruction here. So this add instruction, load word is storing into register R3, and the add immediate is reading from register R3. What we're looking at here is bypassing both the write to the register file and the read from the register file. So we're able to pass, we've got the data available at the end of this cycle here from the load word. And here, this is the continuing execution of the add immediate instruction. We're feeding it directly round to the input to the ALU where it's needed. So bypassing both the register write and a register read, so we're shortening the delay by two cycles that we've got because of this dependency. And so by doing that, we've reduced our cycle down to our stall down to one cycle rather than three. And if then we were to do this instruction reordering as well, we could eliminate this stall completely, get us down to zero, no bubbles. Sounds neat. So let's, let's talk about branches now. Any questions about this, though? All right. Branches and control hazards. So say we have, the issue with branches is that we don't, when you've got a branch instruction that you're encountering in a stream of instructions, you actually don't know where, until you've executed the instruction, what your next instruction should be. So you don't know whether it's at PC+4, or you don't know whether you've got to calculate the branch address and then start fetching instructions from where the jump is to. So we can see this, delay in knowledge in this picture here. We're looking at the phases of a branch if equal instruction. So here we're fetching the instruction. Here we're fetching the values of the registers from the register file. Here we're doing the comparison between R1 and R2. And also we're doing a calculation of the address that we want to branch to. And now in this cycle, we've got the result of the comparison between R1 and R2. And if that comparison is, if they're equal, if one minus the other is zero, then we're actually going to be doing the jump, doing the update of the PC to PC plus N at the end of this cycle here. So there could be won't be until the end of the fourth cycle that we actually know where we should be fetching our next instruction from. And so it's not until the end of the fourth cycle that we can even do the fetch of the subsequent instruction. That's shown in this picture here. Whoops. So here we've got the four steps of the branch of equal instruction. Only at the end of this cycle here do we know where we should fetch the next instruction from. And only here can we do the instruction fetch of that instruction. So here we've got three cycles in which we can't do anything with our pipeline, and we're introducing a quite big bubble. We've got a bubble of we're kind of losing use of all five units for these three cycles until we can start up again here. So this is quite serious. If we've got a lot of branches in our programs, then we're going to be losing a lot of the potential speed up that we could get from pipelining. So how do we deal with this? There are a variety of approaches. Most basic idea is to guess how the branch is going to go right away. If we guess correctly, the bubble can be reduced or eliminated. However, if we guess incorrectly, what will happen will be that we will have to give up the work that we've done speculatively. This is shown in this picture here. So say we're in the scenario that we predict that the branch is not taken. So we have some way of guessing this branch will not be taken when we see that branch instruction. If that's our guess, then we can start executing the following instructions. So there are three following instructions we can start executing here. And so our cycles are times marching on to the right. We're doing this work, then this work, then this work. And then if our prediction is correct, we just continue and fetch a fourth instruction here. However, if our guess turns out to be wrong, then what we have to do is throw away all that speculative work that we've done. That these were the wrong, these three instructions here, remember, are the three instructions that followed BEQ. They weren't the instructions at the address that one might have branched to. And if we are taking the branch, then we don't want to be doing this work here. Now, fortunately, if you look at what these are doing, none of these involves touching data in memory or touching the register file. So it's not too difficult giving up, kind of just forgetting about the execution that's happened over here. If it happened that we had to, we couldn't do the jump till later, that we'd executed further on, we'd have to come up with clever mechanisms whereby somehow we could undo writes to registers or undo potential writes to memory. That's much more difficult to do. Sometimes you have to do it. But hopefully one doesn't get into that scenario. All right, I wanted to have a quick go at the using the, where's it gone? Using this, so I've got a, I don't know how many of you got clickers with you. Okay, so for those of you with clickers, sign in and we'll see. All right, so I'm told I have to click on this thing. Well, that starts it. Stop. All right, so. I haven't even told you the question yet. So the question is the following. So we looked at here the situation for predicting that the branch hasn't been taken. So the question is, if we guess branch taken, is the stall A, 0 cycles, B, 1 cycle, C, 2 cycles, or D, 3 cycles? So that's the question. So is the question clear? No? So without branch prediction at all, we were in a situation on the previous slide. This one here, where we had a three-cycle stall, three-cycle delay. And we saw on this slide how we could reduce that delay, reduce that stall. So we saw how we could reduce the stall down to zero in the case that we guessed that an instruction was not a branch was not taken. So the kind of question for you is, what if we're guessing that we are going to take the branch instruction, how much sooner can we start fetching the next instruction? Can we fetch the next instruction immediately if we're guessing that we're taking the branch instruction, or is there still some delay? And in that case, is the delay still 3 cycles, as it was if we weren't guessing at all, or is it reduced to 2 or 1 or even 0 cycles? All right. I'm happy to talk afterwards to kind of clarify this more, but let's just try the quiz, see what happens. So let's go. So one thing that, if you're completely stuck, let me go back here. So this is the slide which kind of gives you a hint. So this is the slide about how that shows the kind of dress calculation going on for when we take a branch. So this slide really gives you the clue to which of these answers are the answers that we're looking for. So last chance. There could be more than 28 of you here. All right, so we've got plenty of you opt for option C. We had some votes for 0, some for 1, and some for D. So the people saying D were saying, nope, you don't get any benefit whatsoever. People saying A were being very optimistic. So I'm pleased. So the correct answer actually is C. So all of you did see, you can give yourself a pat on the back. For those of you who didn't guess C, let's kind of look very briefly at why C is the right answer. So what we're doing is we're looking at the situation when the branch is taken. So we're looking at how quickly we can calculate where we can branch to get that value into the PC. And the answer is given by, let's get rid of this now. So the answer is given in the slide here. So what we have is, this shows us that after the third cycle here, we've calculated the value of the PC. So and we can't really do that any earlier, because we've got to fetch the values from, we've got to fetch instruction, fetch values from registers, and do this arithmetic here. So we can't know any earlier than the end of the third cycle where we've got to jump to. So the savings we've got, if we're predicting that we're going to take the branch, is one cycle, because normally if we're not predicting, it's not until the end of the fourth cycle that we take the jump. But now we could speculatively take the jump one cycle earlier. So that's why the answer is 2 and not 3. But if you're unsure about that, ask me afterwards, or even better, I should advertise. So you've just finished the first practical. Probably you feel like you've got, I guess, time to do other things now. But the demonstrator is going to be there in the lab. So Thibaut, in particular, is going to be there during for three sessions next week. So this will be an ideal time to drop into the lab and ask for help on any of the material that we've covered so far. If there's anything you're unclear about, say the C programming, if there's anything you've been trying some C examples and haven't got them quite working, or just got some question about something I've talked about in lecture, then that'll be the ideal time to drop into lab, because otherwise things are going to be pretty quiet in the lab. So please make use of him. Don't just let him be there doing his own work. I mean, we're paying him to help you, so make use of him. All right, I'm running over time, sorry. I think this is pretty much it for the lecture. There's just kind of one last slide, and let me just do that slide right now. So it's this slide here. So this is the question is this all we can do to improve performance in a pipelined architecture? And the answer is no, there's way more that you can do.